The title is Affine McDonald Conjectures and Special Values of Felder Varchenko Functions. And this is joint work with Eric Raines and Alexander Varchenko. So the goal of my talk today is going to be to present two different approaches to studying a family of special functions, which hopefully appear in physics. This is a physics institute. So one approach is going to be algebraic, and it's going to come from the theory of quantum affine algebras. And the second approach will be analytic, and it's going to come from the theory of theta hypergeometric functions. And so this will all tie back to some sort of affine McDonald theory. So let me start off by talking about just ordinary McDonald polynomials and what they'd have to do with quantum groups. Let me know if you can't read what I write. Okay, so to get us all on the same page, let's consider the ordinary McDonald polynomials. So there are two parameter family of symmetric polynomials, p, lambda, x, depending on parameters q and t. So they're indexed by partitions lambda, and they're symmetric polynomials in n variables, x1 through xn, depending on q and t. And they can be defined as the unique family of symmetric polynomials with leading term x to the lambda, and such that they jointly diagonalize the difference operators this explicit family of difference operators introduced by McDonald. DR. Yeah. And so the idea is that DRN will have eigenvalue given by the rth elementary symmetric polynomial and certain combinations of the Q and T when I apply it to the McDonald polynomial indexed by lambda. So I'm not actually going to talk about this definition that much more in the rest of the talk, so it's not super important what this is. But I just want to say the McDonald polynomials, of course, generalize a bunch of families of special functions, like Schur polynomials, Hall-Littlewood polynomials, Jack polynomials, and so on. Now,
I want to know what the ingredients are. What type of things are R and T sub Q and
psi? Okay, yeah, sorry. So R is an integer between 1 and n. So for each integer, I have this difference operator, which is diagonalized on these polynomials. The eigenvalue of this inference operator acting on this polynomial will be the rth elementary symmetric polynomial in some variables related to q, t, and lambda. Tq of xi is the q shift operator in the variable xi. Okay, so you can show that these operators are self-adjoint with respect to some explicit integer product, and these are the eigenfunctions. Okay, so these were introduced by McDonald in the 80s as some sort of unification of symmetric functions. And there's a big story related to that. But what I want to talk about in this talk is an approach to these functions coming from the theory of quantum groups that was introduced by Edingoff and Kirilov Jr. in the mid-90s. So their construction goes as follows. So let's consider UQGLN. So this is the finite type quantum group of type A. And for any integral dominant weight lambda, then there exists a unique intertwiner, phi sub lambda, between the highest weight irreducible representation L with highest weight lambda plus m minus 1 rho. So lambda with a certain shift to the same thing, tensored with a specific representation. So I'm going to take the symmetric power of the fundamental representation, and I'll twist it by half the determinant. So I'll call this representation W sub m minus 1. Okay, so this representation is chosen to have a one-dimensional zero weight space. And so there's a unique such phi which satisfies the following. So I should take the highest weight vector to the highest weight vector tensored with some vector W naught, plus low order terms, where these are terms of lower tensor rate weight in the first tensor factor. And here W naught is a specified vector chosen in zero weight space for this representation. Okay, so for any lambda, I get this unique intertwiner phi sub lambda. And the theorem that Edingoff and Kirilov Jr. showed was that essentially the McDonald polynomials are generalized traces of these representations. So let me write it down and then I'll explain. Okay, so what this says is I take the McDonald polynomial where t is an integer power of q. So t is q to the m. And instead of q, I actually have q squared. For some reason, if I want to use the quantum group with parameter q, I should use the McDonald parameter with q squared. So now what I have on the right-hand side is a ratio of generalized traces. What that means is I should consider the intertwiner as some sort of matrix whose rows and columns are indexed by bases of this irreducible representation, and where every entry lies in W sub m minus 1. When I take the trace, I can add up the diagonal matrix elements, and those will all be weight zero elements. So in fact, a trace of an intertwiner like this is valued in the zero weight space of W m minus 1. And I'll interpret that as a complex number via this identification. Okay, so these are ratios of two numerical functions. And so what Edingoff and Kirilov Jr. showed is that actually that gives a McDonald polynomial. Okay, so this is some sort of interpretation of McDonald polynomials in terms of finite type quantum groups. Okay, so they were able to use this approach to prove basically all conjectures that McDonald stated about his polynomials.
Sorry, this is x to the n, since
sorry, this is x to the h. This just means like the h is an element of the Cartan. So like x to the h evaluated on an element of weight mu would be xi to the mu 1, or x1 to the mu 1, x to the mu 2, and so on. Yeah, sorry, this is just some notation. In the simplest case where, let's say m was just equal to 1, then w sub m minus 1 is just c. And this is simply the Schur polynomial. It's just the character of GLN. Okay, so are there any more questions on this construction? Sorry, this is phi 0. M is an integer.
Well, right, but I mean, it's not like bounded below n or something, right?
Yes, it has. No, M and n are independent here. Yeah.
Well, in any case, it's like, there's lots of magic when something comes out to a polynomial.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, if you want to consider non-integer M, then you can sort of prove it for integer M, and that's going to be enough, because anything you want to prove is some, like, rep. Identity of polynomials or something. Okay, so now I want to define, so Edingoff and Kirilov Jr. used this idea to define what they called affine McDonald polynomials. So essentially, I'm going to try to mimic this construction, replacing the finite type quantum group with the quantum affine algebra. So let me write down what that means. So if I take UQGLN And I'll replace it by UQSL2 hat. And this definition can be made in general, but in the rest of the talk, I'm actually going to restrict to the SL2 hat case. So what I should do is replace this. So let me set up some conventions for UQSL2 hat. So I'll take the Cartan H tilde to be the finite type Cartan plus the central charge and some degree operator. And the dual Cartan will be the finite type dual Cartan plus some dual elements. Now I use two types of representations for UQSL2 hat. So I have the Verma module, so M, that's going to be indexed by a highest weight and a level. And then I'll have the irreducible integrable module. And I'll denote that by L. So here, K plus mu plus K lambda naught should be chosen to be dominant, a dominant integral. And finally, I'll take the evaluation module. So for any finite dimensional representation V of UQSL2, I can get the evaluation module V of Z via the pullback along the evaluation map. Okay. So what I want to do is sort of rerun this story with these instead of the finite type representations. So here's a proposition which comes up in the study of the QKZ equation. So let's take W naught in the zero weight space of this representation we were talking about earlier. Then there's a unique intertwiner. Yeah, exactly. Well, and in the QKZ equation, there needs to be at least two V representations. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to consider a setting where there is actually only one. So there's no real, there's no QKZ equation, but we can still do the construction. So I'll call this intertwiner upsilon. And it's going to be a function of six variables. Or sorry, upsilon is not a function of six variables. Upsilon is just indexed by mu, k, and m. And it's going to map from the irreducible integral module with a certain shift. Now instead of rho over there, I need to take the affine rho. So I'll say what that is in a moment. And it'll map to the same irreducible integrable module, tensored with the evaluation representation, corresponding to the same representation W as over there. Now what I want is a constraint, a normalization of this by the highest weight. So I want the highest weight vector to map to the same thing, tensored with my chosen vector in the zero weight space, plus lower terms. Okay, so you can basically construct this intertwiner by sort of starting out with this and working term by term to get the rest. Okay, so now I want to define the trace function is some generalized trace of this. And I'll call that chi of six parameters. So mu, k, and m, and then q, lambda, and omega. And that's simply the trace of this intertwine. But I'm going to add in here a Cartan element, which is the same as before, and then some degree parameter, d, to track the different graded levels of this module. Okay, so now the definition of the affine McDonald polynomial given by Ettinghoff and Kirilov Jr. is just mimicking this result.
Why is it Q, the variable here? I mean, here you had X and here you had Q.
That's a good point. So I put Q here too, sort of in, first of all, to follow the convention, but there's going to be some symmetry between mu and lambda.
Is the same Q as the UQ?
It is the same Q as the UQ, that's right. So in some sense, it's there's no actual difference. I could call X over there just Q to the lambda.
Q to the lambda is the same as X.
Yeah, Q to the lambda is the same as X, that's right. Okay, so here's the definition. Okay, so the affine McDonald polynomial is a ratio of these traces. So I'm going to call it J mu K M. So let me say a few things. So first of all, I didn't write down a z dependence here, even though the intertwiner a priori depended on z. The reason for that is actually every diagonal matrix element of the intertwiner is already independent of z. So therefore, the trace is independent of z. Second point is that it's scalar valued because it's actually valued in the zero weight space, which I identify with the C span of W naught. Okay. The third thing is I'm taking a trace over this large infinite dimensional space, the irreducible integrable module. So a priori, it's not clear that this is going to have good convergence properties. And so in certain cases, and we'll see later in the talk, it does have good convergence properties. But a priori, this is a formal series in Q to the minus 2 omega. So in each degree, you can show this is simply an intertwiner between certain finite type irreducibles. And that's certainly a finite series. But it's not clear that it converges in any sense. Okay. And also, I should add, this is not actually a polynomial, but in this paper, they name it this, so I feel like you just have to respect the convention. But it's actually a symmetric Laurent series in Q to the lambda and Q to the omega.
Is it going to diagonalize some elliptic version of the
operator? So it's going to diagonalize some formal difference operators. What that means is that I have a formal series in Q to the minus 2 omega, each term of which is a difference operator of greater and greater order. So it's sort of difference operator, but not really.
So there is an elliptic version of those, so you take the rational function by the actual theta function.
Yes, so that's, I can't prove this, but that should be some sort of scaling limit of this. When k goes to the critical level.
Ah.
Okay. All right, so now I'm going to state a few conjectures about these in parallel to McDonald's conjectures on the finite type McDonald polynomials. Okay, so let me first recall in the trigonometric setting what a few of McDonald's conjectures were. So first, there's The denominator, which essentially is an evaluation of the denominator in the theorem of Ettinghoff and Kirilov Jr. So that says that the trace of this intertwiner is given by some explicit product formula. I'll just write it here so you get a sense. And I'll note that you can actually write this in a form which is can be generalized to all root systems. So I'm going to do that. And the second one I want to focus on in this talk is the evaluation, which is what happens when I replace, when I take the principal specialization for the McDonald polynomial. So that corresponds to taking p mu evaluated at 2 to the m rho. And what I'll get is the following guy. Again, it's some explicit product. Now, McDonald also had some a symmetry conjecture and an interproduct conjecture, but I'm actually not going to talk about those today. So the rest of the talk will explain how to generalize these, how to get the correct form of these in the affine set. Okay, so first let me state what we think is the correct form for the denominator. Okay, so that corresponds to evaluating the denominator in that definition over there. So chi 0, 0. So we believe it's the following. So first, I'm going to mimic the trigonometric expression, but replace the finite type root system with the affine root system. However, there's going to be a necessary correction term. So I'll call that delta. So what I've written here, this first line is just pretty much an exact copy of the finite type results taken to the affine setting. And the correction term should be the following. So I said this is a conjecture, but here are some, we have a bit of evidence for this conjecture. So we can prove it in the case n equals 2 and m equals 2.
What's this notation
here? This is the infinite Pockhammer symbol. So aq is the product n greater than 0, 1 minus aq. Please tell me in the future if I write other similar symbols. Okay, so for n equals 2 and m equals 2, we can prove this explicitly. For n equals 2, and sorry, n here is SLn. So I think I lied a little bit when I said that I was only going to use SL2. Yeah. But everything else I've written is SLn. Yeah. Okay, so for n equals 2 and t equals q squared, we can prove this. When n equals 2 and m is between 3 and 17, we can check on the computer. But we can only check to first order in q to the minus 2 omega. And we can also do this when n equals 3 and m is 2 or 3.
What goes wrong at
18? I didn't optimize the program enough. and that's the same thing which goes wrong here. But in theory, one could write a program to check for as large as one wants. Okay. There are actually some other reasons why you might believe this other than this computational evidence. I'll talk about those after I state what we think the correct evaluation feature is. Okay, so for the evaluation, here's our conjecture. So I should take the affine MacDonald polynomial and evaluate it at some principal specialization, which in this case is this. And again, I'll get something which is the trigonometric expression and then some modification, which should only show up in the affine setting. So here's the expression. And now I have two correction terms. And they're very similar to this delta. So in the evaluation setting, we're able to prove this for n equals 2 and m equals 2. Okay, so let me now talk about, you know, why one might expect these conjectures to hold. So first of all, the reason these conjectures might be reasonable is that they're reasonable in certain limits. So let me talk about what type of limits there are. So first, there's the trigonometric limit. So that corresponds to reducing the quantum affine algebra to the finite type quantum group. And numerically, it corresponds to taking q to the minus 2 omega to 0. There's a strange phenomenon where if you take this limit, actually the dependence on the level goes away. And in this limit, both of the conjectures reduce to the standard trigonometric type McDonald conjectures. A more interesting limit is the classical limit. So that corresponds to reducing the quantum affine algebra to the classical affine algebra. Numerically, it means I should take q to 1, so I'll set q to be e to the epsilon and set epsilon to 0. But I'm going to scale up my Cartan parameters in a proportional way. So I'll set lambda to be epsilon inverse lambda, maybe underscore, and omega, epsilon inverse omega. Sorry, this is not actually this. So I need to scale up all of these and send omega to 0. Okay, so in this limit, the affine McDonald polynomials, they go to affine Jacks, Jack polynomials. And these are just defined in the same way where everywhere I have quantum affine algebra, I instead take affine algebra. And in this setting, this correction factor, delta sub m, actually becomes 1. And so Edingoff and Kirilov Jr. were able to prove the classical limit of this result just using purely representation theoretic means on the affine algebra. Unfortunately, the classical limit of the evaluation conjecture involves some pretty subtle asymptotics, so there's no real results on that. Okay, there are two more limits. So there's another one which I want to call the affine Hall limit. Okay, so that's going to correspond to sending q to 0, but fixing all the other parameters. By that I mean fixing q to the m, q to the k, and q to the omega constant. Okay, so in this case, we can sort of at the level of formulas, show some relation to a normalization factor which appears in the study of affine Hall polynomials. So let me show you what that is. So I can write this correction factor in terms of, in a way that isolates these four variables as independent parameters. So let me write it as follows, where delta is some function. So it's going to be expressed in terms of double Pockhammer symbols. So the double Pockhammer symbol is just same thing as the similar thing to the single Pockhammer symbol. So I get this guy. Okay, so my correction term is expressed in this way, and when I take this affine Hall limit of this delta, what I get is this factor. And let me call this delta McDonald. So it turns out that this delta McDonald showed up in some work of McDonald from the early 2000s in the following way. So let's let W affine be the affine wild group? Of SLN hat. Then this guy is equal to the full. The following sum over the affine wild group. And here, this W affine is certain normalization. OK, so the point here is that if I replace the affine wild group here with the finite type wild group, then the corresponding sum is simply 1. In the affine setting, this becomes this strange correction factor. And actually, this factor showed up in some recent work of Braverman, Finkelberg, Garland, Kazdan, and Petnaik on some affine Hall polynomials. So that's why I call this affine Hall limit. But I don't really understand why this factor should be common. Okay, so that's some reason why you might think that these conjectures are true. And in the rest of the time, I'd like to tell you about how to actually prove these conjectures in the case where n equals 2 and m equals 2. And that's going to go through this technique of relating these traces of intertwiners of quantum affine algebras to certain theta hypergeometric integrals. So these integrals are going to come from the work of Felder and Varchenko on hypergeometric integral solutions to QKZ and QKZB type equations. Okay, so that's why I'm going to call the resulting functions Felder-Varchenko functions. And so Felder-Varchenko function is a function of 5 parameters. So this is 4 SL2 hat. And the three-dimensional representation. So it's the following function. And I told you it's a theta hypergeometric integral, which means that I'm just going to write down an integral. So I'll write down this expression, then tell you what each term means. Okay, so here theta is just Jacobi's first theta function. Everything is an additive notation here. This function omega is what Felder and Varchenko call a phase function, and it's a ratio of elliptic gamma functions. So that means the following. So here gamma is the elliptic gamma function. And that's simply a ratio of double Pockhammer symbols. Well, it's an elliptic generalization of the gamma function. But if you've never seen it before, it's just some explicit function. Sorry?
And then these multiplied by normal
functions. Yeah, these are normal theta functions, that's right.
And then they have solving some shifts of the parameters.
Right, so this function comes from, so this function belongs to a family of functions. So for any number of tensor products of evaluation representations of SL2, Felder and Varchenko define an analog of this function. So it's, they'll have an possible, a multidimensional integration cycle of certain products which look like this. When there's more than one representation, it's going to depend on the spectral parameters associated with those representations. And they constructed them to be hypergeometric integral solutions to the QKZB equations. Now in this case, we're considering a single three-dimensional representation. So the integral doesn't depend on the spectral parameter, and indeed there's no QKZB equation. However, what they were able to show is that this still satisfies what they call the QKZB heat equation. That's some integral equation, which is a quantization of the KZB heat equation.
Is the conformal index of
I'm not sure if that. Well, okay, so I'm not sure what a superconformal index is, but I'm about to say that this is the a theta series in this is a quantized conformal block. So yeah, let me say what that means. Okay, so unfortunately, I'm going to have to write down another big formula, which is a theta series in these. So here's the definition. So let's first define a non-symmetric theta function in these functions. So it's going to be the following. So it's going to be some prefactor, which I won't write down because it's a bit big, but that's a quotient of products of theta functions and single and double Pockhammer symbols in all the variables. And now there's a key term, which is an integral. So the integral is the following. So it has the phase function as before. It's going to have the two ratios of theta function terms. And now I'm going to insert another theta function. So definition looks kind of long, but essentially this is a series in these functions where I vary mu. So it's something like I sum over an arithmetic progression in mu, and then I put a quadratic weight. I put like, it's a sum over j of lambda j, and then e to the minus j squared, something like this. So you should think of it as a theta series in these Felder-Varchenko functions u. Okay, so the actual object we want to think about is a symmetrization of this. So the definition, this is by Felder and Varchenko in 04. Let's take delta lambda mu tau eta to be just symmetrizing this previous one in lambda. Okay, so they then actually defined in terms of this delta what they call the elliptic McDonald polynomial at t equals q squared. So it's just some normalization of this. So let me write down the normalization. So there's some prefactor. And I can identify somehow some specific poles in lambda of delta. So I'm going to divide those up. OK, so they conjectured that actually this elliptic McDonald polynomial is related to Edingoff and Kirilov Jr.'s affine McDonald polynomial. And in fact, that's true. So, and that's the main technical tool we're going to use. So this is from my thesis. So in a certain numerical range, we have the following. So the affine McDonald polynomial at m equals 2, well, it's equal to some explicit ratio of products of single and double Pockhammer symbols times this elliptic McDonald polynomial with certain parameters. Okay, so this gives some explicit integral representation of this trace of an intertwiner between integral irreducible modules for the quantum affine algebra. So let's see. So I have 10 minutes, so I'll talk a little bit about, so I'll say two things. First, how do we prove those conjectures given this? Well, using this result, we can translate any statement about the affine McDonald polynomial to some explicit theta hypergeometric integral. And then we have to do a bunch of tricks to evaluate this integral, but essentially it's only manipulation of integrals after this point. So now I want to talk about how does this sort of work. Okay, so there are essentially two steps. So the first step is to reduce to trace over Verma modules.
Is it good to think about the this definition, sort of the form version of a torus compound
block? Yeah, it's exactly the q-deformed version of a one-loop torus compound block. Yeah, that's right.
With one insertion of the generic representation.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so the proof of this has two steps. First is to reduce to computing the trace of an intertwiner over Verma modules. And the second step is to, first compute the trace over Verma modules. And the second step is to go from Verma modules to irreducible integrable modules using the affine BGG resolution. So I guess I'll erase from here.
Compute both sides.
I'll explain. Okay, so step one. So originally I had an intertwiner between irreducible modules. So instead I'll consider an intertwiner psi mu k m of z. So let's just say mu k. See? Between Verma modules. So let's consider this intertwiner, and we can compute the trace of this guy. Okay, and so let's define T of Q lambda omega mu k Okay, so what we're going to show is that, well, schematic theorem, T is simply a renormalization of U. Okay, so the first step is basically to compute the trace of an intertwiner of quantum affine algebras, but over Verma modules. So for this, we're going to use Q bosonization. Okay, so what does that mean? So there's a theorem of Matsuo from 94. So that says that there's an explicit construction of the Verma module inside a tensor product of Fock spaces. So more specifically, the Verma module with certain highest weight is equal to the kernel of, okay, well, let's start, well, start out by bosonization means that I should take a map of my quantum affine algebra to a certain tensor product of Heisenberg algebras. And that map should satisfy that I have an explicit representation of those Heisenberg algebras on some Fock spaces, which matches the Verma module. So I'm gonna take three Heisenberg algebras in this case. So let's take F mu S to be a Heisenberg algebra tensored, to be just the tensor product of three Heisenberg algebras. And these are standard Heisenberg algebras. This is Q-deform Wakimoto. But somehow in the quantum affine setting, it becomes significantly more complicated than the classical setting. So I need to take, first of all, a direct sum over all S.
Okay, just a question. So it's quantum affine is it true? Presumably has some map shown on maps of ramified instantons. That's correct.
I know affine SL2 does. I'm not sure about quantum affine SL2. But I'm just not familiar with that word.
Heteroretic version.
Yeah, it's. I think the answer to your question is probably yes, but I just don't know. Okay, so in this bosonization story, we take an infinite direct sum of these tensor product of Fock spaces. Okay, but somehow this space is too big. So there's a certain field A to naught, which is the zero mode of some explicit vertex operator. And what's equal to the Verma module is the kernel of the action of this field on this large space.
So you have Bosonized beta gamma
Right, so this is actually different from Bosonized beta gamma, because it doesn't involve, like these are all standard Heisenbergs.
There's yeah, special, no, yeah. But the mode is a boson yeah. And a beta gamma.
Exactly.
But the beta gamma itself can be, usually Bosonized for isis with boson and fermions.
Yeah, exactly. This is, and so unfortunately, this makes computations in this setting significantly more complicated. So, okay, so Wakimoto wrote down this, and he also wrote down, you know, a certain expression for intertwining operators in terms of some screening operators. And so when you just write down what that means, you end up wanting to compute the following expression. So this gives you okay, so let me just write down something to give you the flavor of what computations are involved here. So you get a sum of certain integral, and then there's a Jackson integral of a trace of a product of five vertex hoppers. And so these are some explicit vertex operators, some three of which are actually the sum or difference of two vertex operators. So there are eight terms here. And each of these terms can be evaluated, and somehow you can match them to the contour, to the formal expansion of the contour integral expression for the Felder-Bartrink function. Okay, so it's not too relevant what this expression is, but you get into some pretty hairy computation here. Okay, so that's step one. Now, very briefly, step two, the affine BGT resolution that expresses the irreducible integral module for the quantum affine algebra via an infinite resolution by Verma modules. So I take m lambda plus k naught. It's resolved by, you know, l mu plus k naught. And then I have a direct sum of elements of the affine Weyl group or indexed by their length. Sorry, I have it reversed. So what that means is that if I want to take a trace over intertwiners of the irreducible module, I can write it as a series in the trace over intertwiners by the Verma module. And in fact, it's going to be some theta series. So this theta series will exactly match the theta series here. So somehow that translates this result from Verma modules to the result for irreducibles. Okay, so that's pretty much all I have to say. So to sum up, we have this technique which allows us to transfer questions about these traces over irreducible modules for the quantum affine algebra to questions about explicit theta hypergeometric integrals. And from that, we're able to get some conjectures on paralleling those of McDonald on the affine McDonald polynomials. All right, that's it.
And I think it's there, but I still don't know.
Yeah, so I should say that I am by any means a physicist. However, I strongly suspect there's some physics because when I was doing these calculations, it was very helpful to read a lot of physics papers from the 80s. So, for example, this computation is something called the method of coherent states. And I'm not really sure what this method is as physically, but mathematically it's a way to compute like one loop correlation functions on Fock space. And then there are a bunch of papers by mathematicians that call these traces, but over irreducibles, like quantized conformal blocks. Now, I don't know if this is a real thing or, yeah. And I guess the last thing is that when, I didn't mention this earlier, but when you take the critical limit, when you take k to the critical level, you can't do this construction anymore, but you can still formally consider the functions. And when you take that limit of these functions, what you get is the beta ansatz eigenfunction for the quantized, or for the Q-Lemme system. So I guess that's three ways that there might be some connection to physics, but I don't know that much physics.
So you get the beta ansatz for what?
For the Q-Lemme system. So it's a certain integrable system, and the Hamiltonian is this. So these are additive shift up operators in Lemme. So it's quantization of like Lemme function.
you again.